this mess going on. He's probably meeting with important people, making it known that he doesn't condone Rourke's actions. I can't go back home until this is all over. Her pleading gaze moves back and forth between Calla and me. Please don't leave me on my own. It makes sense for me to stay with you. We want the same thing. We both want to stop Rourke. You really want to fight your own brother? Calla asks. That might seem like it's not such a big deal, but when you're face to face with him, and a lifetime of shared memories floods your mind, I doubt you'll find it easy. Aurora pauses. Well, I don't know about face-to-face fighting, but I certainly want to help stop him. You must know the Unseelie Court doesn't agree with what he's doing, right? We were happy with the way things were. I was happy. And now Rourke's actions have threatened to take away everything we care about. So, whatever you're planning to do to stop him, I want to help. I can tell you things about him, give you information you might be able to use against him. Calla narrows her eyes. What makes you think I'm planning to do anything about Rourke? Confusion flickers across Aurora's face. You're part of the Griffin Rebel movement, aren't you? Calla doesn't respond, but neither does she deny it. Yeah, so, obviously you'll want to stop Rourke. Aurora continues. I've heard about some of the things you guys do. Not the guild stories. She rolls her eyes. Every Unseelie Fae knows the guild is full of tall tales when they're talking about any organization other than their own. I'm talking about the other stories. The stories about how you help people, off the record. You're almost as irritatingly noble as the Guardians themselves, but, you know, since you're breaking the law to do it, that makes you way cooler. Calla raises her eyebrows and looks at me. When you told her not to lie, was that only to you or to both of us? Hey, I'm not lying to you! Aurora exclaims. She looks at me. I am not lying to her. I want to help. I want my old life back. Then the only way that's ever going to happen is if Rourke is stopped. Calla sighs and mutters something about possibly regretting this, but what she says is, okay, you can stay. Chapter 15. We move again, Calla directing the fairy paths this time, and not telling us where we are when we get there. Instead of a valley, we're at the top of a hill this time. It's one of many rolling hills, stretching as far into the distance as I can see, which is quite far, thanks to the bright moon above us. What's strange about these rolling hills, though, is that the grass they're covered in is blue. The trees and bushes dotted across the landscape have blue leaves, and the flowers blooming near the spot Calla's chosen for our campsite are blue, too. Imperia sits, folds her gigantic wings neatly around her body, and lowers her head to the ground, clearly deciding she's had enough activity for today. Bandit finally leaves the safety of my pocket, shifts into the largest cat form he can manage, and hesitantly sniffs Imperia. I leave him to explore our new surroundings and remove the tablets and mirror from the backpack so I can suspend them in the air. The spell is so simple, it's barely a spell at all. More like nudging magic toward the items to surround them and hold them in position. I've just left them lined up in the air when Aurora comes to my side and says, "The middle of nowhere? Seriously?" Calla definitely doesn't trust me. She's just taking precautions, I say, looking over my shoulder to where Calla is walking around us in a wide circle, weaving her fingers through the air like she did at the last location, and repeating the words to a protective enchantment. She doesn't know if there might be some spell on you that relays everything you hear or think back to someone else. I pause and turn back to Aurora. I assume a spell like that must exist. There seem to be spells for just about everything else. Aurora shrugs. I guess, maybe, but she could take us back to wherever you guys live, and I'd have no clue where it is. I don't understand why we have to camp out a billion miles away from civilization. I ignore her exaggeration and explain that because we tried to rescue several Griffin-gifted rebels from a guild facility and ended up breathing in a tracking spell, we're now constantly on the move. Oh, that's unfortunate, she grumbles as I crouch down again beside the backpack. I was hoping to sleep in a real bed tonight. I look up at her, and she hastily adds, But I'm still grateful you let me come with you, of course. And the possibility of a bed was certainly not the only reason I said I want to help stop Rourke. Good. I tilt my head. Where exactly have you been sleeping since you ran away? She seats herself on the grass beside me and says, in a field a short distance outside Stanmead. I slept right up against Imperia so she could protect me if a threat showed up during the night. Sounds like a far cry from the palace luxury you're accustomed to. She runs both hands down her dirty, crumpled skirt. It was, but I was hoping you'd come back to Stanmead at some point. I didn't know how else to contact you. I hoped you'd do something magical, and I'd somehow know you were there. Then I saw fire and glass shooting into the air earlier, and figured I should check it out. I'm glad you did. Oh, hey, you must be hungry. I rummage inside the backpack and add, I wonder if we still have any food in here. Actually, Aurora hesitates, then says, I probably shouldn't tell you I stole food and a few blankets from someone's home. I shrug and continue removing items from the backpack. You had to survive somehow. As long as you didn't hurt anyone, I'm not going to judge you. Of course I didn't hurt anyone. She cocks her head and points at the soft, pill-shaped object in my hand. What is that? A sleeping bag. A miniature version. I shake the backpack, and what tumbles free looks almost like the contents of a dollhouse. Aside from all the miniature weapons, we've also got sleeping bags, pillows, a first aid potions kit, empty bottles to collect water when we do our water drawing spells, a notebook, and even a tiny pouch of toiletries. We have quite a few things to carry around with us, I explain, so it's easier if most of them are small. We didn't shrink our clothes, though, I add, pulling out a few crumpled items of clothing. We don't have many outfit options, so we didn't think it necessary to shrink them. And they provide cushioning for all the miniature items. Do you think I could perhaps borrow some of those clothes? You may have figured out I've been wearing this dress for a number of days, and, She scratches her arm and mumbles. I was obviously never taught any cleaning spells or clothes-casting spells. So I can't even transform this dress into something more suitable for riding around on a dragon. I know a basic shower spell. Thank goodness, she adds hastily. So at least I'm semi-clean. But showering the dress doesn't seem to get grass stains out. I laugh. We'll make a plan. You won't have to wear a dirty dress for much longer. She pokes through our collection of miniature belongings and picks up a tiny sword to examine it more closely. Cute. But you know you're using up magical energy every time you shrink and enlarge these things, right? Yes, but it's separate from my griffin ability magic, so at least I'm not wasting that. Besides, I don't know how to do much with my normal magic yet, so I can't exactly help in other areas, like casting protective enchantments and hurling combat spells at anyone who wants to fight us. I'm learning, of course, but since Kala's the expert, she can do that stuff, and I usually do the daily shrinking and enlarging of everything we have to carry around with us. When Aurora doesn't answer, I glance up and find her watching me with a smile I can't decipher. What? You've learned so much since we first met at Chevalier. Do you remember how you could barely create a flame during that first lesson we had together? You mean the only lesson we had together? I ask with a wry smile. Yes, I remember. It was so flipping frustrating. And now, look at you. Opening doorways, shrinking and enlarging things. Plus, all the things I taught you while you lived at the palace. And I'm guessing you're a lot closer to mastering your griffin ability now, seeing as how you were able to command me at will earlier. Her gaze slips down. And you don't have the bracelet anymore. No. I got rid of it after I escaped the Shadow World. I explain, as Bandit pads closer, shrinks into a rabbit, and hops onto my lap. Kala thought Rourke might be able to use it to track me. Aurora frowns. I don't know. Perhaps he could have, although, if he could track you, then he wouldn't have needed to tell his glass fairy friend to go looking for you. Or perhaps that was another lie. Her shoulders slump as she leans back. It's hard to know what the truth was, now that I know how many things he's lied about. Yeah. I enlarge one of the sleeping bags and roll it out. But yes, to answer your question, I definitely have more control over my griffin ability now. I can hold on to it, using only little bits when I need it, which usually means I have enough to keep me going until it replenishes again. Although now that I'm using it for fighting, it probably won't last nearly as long.
You're using it for fighting? Aurora asks. How?
I smile and reach for another sleeping bag. I'll show you tomorrow.
Okay, I think we should be safe here, Calla says, walking over and taking a seat opposite us on the ground. She crosses her legs.
Thanks for doing the sleeping bags. No problem, I just need to do one more. Good thing Chase threw a few spares in here. I find another sleeping bag among the items spread out on the ground in front of me and enlarge it.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, Aurora says, but is that something we should be worried about?
She points past the mirror and tablets, hanging in the air, to where familiar gold numbers are counting down the time until we need to leave. Remember I told you we're constantly on the move now? I say. The countdown reminds us when to leave.
Ah, clever.
I turn to Calla. So what's going on? What did Chase say when you spoke to him at the last stop?
Sounds like there's going to be a meeting with the Guild Council, the Seelie King, the Unseelie King, and their respective advisors. A summit.
Seriously? Aurora sits forward. My father's meeting with the Seelies and the Guild? I don't think that's ever happened before. At least not since I've been living at the palace.
It's kind of historic, Calla says, nodding. It's been proposed that the most important thing now is restoring the divide between the two worlds. Magic that has spilled into the human world must be removed, and those human soldiers who found their way into this world must be sent back.
Seelies and Unseelies need to put aside their differences to accomplish both those goals. Afterwards, they can go back to their separate territories and hate each other from a distance.
I assume someone said that in more politically correct terms? I ask.
Hopefully, Calla says with a laugh. Anyway, Chase will get back to me when he knows more details about the summit. In the meantime, she turns to Aurora. Why don't you tell us more about your brother? And I'll see what food we have left in here.
She lifts the backpack and looks inside.
I've already checked, I say, pushing a small box toward her. Our options are limited. Grapes, a few chocolate apples, and those dinner pop things.
Dinner pops? Aurora repeats, referring to the bite-sized spheres that apparently contain a full meal's worth of nutrition while managing to taste like nothing.
Wow, I don't think I've ever been in a position where I've been forced to eat a dinner pop, she says.
Calla arches an eyebrow and looks at her, and Aurora hastens to add, Right, sorry, talk about Rourke.
She sucks in a deep breath.
Let's see. Well, he's always been very ambitious. I thought that was normal for someone who was born to be a king one day, so I didn't realize the full extent of his ambition until he started talking about claiming the Shadow World without our father's consent so he could rule it. I suppose that makes him impatient, too. He never wanted to wait until Dad stepped down or died.
Calla nods as she passes each of us a dinner pop. She balances a few grapes on my knee in front of Bandit and asks,
So he's always been desperate to rule, to be in control?
Yes. And he's always admired our Uncle Marzell. His life's work, at least. Obviously, we never met him. It always irritated my father whenever Rourke went on and on about the amazing things Uncle Zell could have achieved if Lord Draven hadn't gotten in the way.
Interesting, Calla murmurs.
I finish chewing my tasteless dinner pop and lean forward. Was this guy Marzell your father's brother?
Aurora nods. You've probably heard about Lord Draven, the guy who almost conquered our entire realm, covered most of the world in perpetual winter, and brainwashed everyone?
Well, it actually all started with my uncle. He was in search of a famous dead halfling's power, so he could consume it and become more powerful. He also figured out that some fairies had extra magic. This was before the guild discovered them and called them griffin-gifted. And he was hunting them down so he could make an army of them.
Draven was one of these gifted, also a halfling with a buttload of power, and after my uncle found the hidden power from the dead halfling, Draven killed him and took the power for himself. Rourke always said how unfortunate it was that it happened that way. If Draven had never got involved, it would have been our uncle who took that power. The Unseelies might have ruled the entire world by now. Or both worlds, actually. Or whoever killed Draven would have killed your uncle. Someone did kill Draven, right? I think I remember that from one of the few lessons I had at Chevalier House. Well, yes, but it's complicated, Aurora says. Everyone thought he was killed. And he totally deserved it, the brainwashing bastard. Calla coughs, interrupting Aurora's next words, which is probably exactly what Dash would have done if he were here. Aurora gives us a guilty smile before continuing. Sorry, language, I know. Anyway, everyone thought Draven was dead, but then it turned out he'd survived somehow, and he ended up in the Seely Queen's custody. And then, when that whole Velazar Veil thing happened, he was consumed in an enchanted fire. So yes, he's dead now. But if it had been my uncle in his position, he might have survived all that. He might still be ruling today. And that's what Rourke always liked to point out to my father. No offense to your family, I say, but I'm glad that didn't happen. I look at Calla to see her response to this information, but she's staring past Aurora with her eyes partially glazed over. Calla, I ask, are you still listening? She blinks. Yes, sorry. Just thinking of the past. She refocuses on Aurora once more. So, your father didn't like the idea of the Unseelies ruling an entire world, or two entire worlds, since that was Draven's eventual aim, instead of just their own territory? Well, Aurora's expression becomes thoughtful. To be honest, I think he might have liked that idea if he'd been the one to come up with it, but since it was Uncle Zell's secret plan and he totally failed at it, Dad always said it was stupid, that Uncle Zell reached too far and it got him killed, but, you know. She pushes her purple and dark brown tresses over her shoulder. I'm pretty sure he wishes he'd come up with the idea first. Calla's nodding again. I see. And Rourke has always admired that idea, so maybe that's what he's trying to do now. Except he can't have our world because he'd have to fight both the Seelies and the Unseelies, and he can't have the Shadow World because it's tiny, and let's be honest, it isn't even a real world. So he's left with trying to take over the non-magic world instead. So the Haverton Tower Hotel and all the other incidents aren't just part of some massive magical temper tantrum then, I say. They're part of a last-minute disorganized attempt to take over the human world? Maybe it's not last-minute, Aurora says. Maybe he always planned to do this eventually. I don't know. Or maybe we're completely wrong, Calla says, and Rourke's just throwing his anger around the human realm because he has nothing better to do. I push my hands through my hair. Someone had better stop him soon, before he ruins both worlds. Do you think they'll kill him? Aurora asks in a small voice. The guild or the Seely soldiers or whoever catches up to him first? Calla is quiet before answering, long enough for me to remember what she said as we watched human soldiers marching into the Fey realm with guns and explosives. I've never wanted to kill, but right now I could kill Rourke if no one was there to stop me. I don't know, she says eventually. I hope not. I hope he'll be justly punished instead. But it will be up to the Unseelies to determine his punishment. Aurora looks down at her hands. Oh, she says, picking up the dinner pot between her thumb and forefinger. I forgot about this. She places it carefully in her mouth and starts chewing, an unimpressed expression on her face. I look away from her with a small smile on my lips. I'm glad she got away from the Unseelie Palace and managed to find me. Who knows what will happen at the end of all this, but hopefully, when the Seelies and Unseelies go back to hating each other, and Calla and I finally get back to our home,
Aurora and I will still be friends. As the bright moon continues to rise above us, illuminating our enchanted blue surroundings, I say, "Sitting here, it all seems so far away. The Haverton Tower Hotel and those human soldiers crashing through our world, almost as if it could never touch us."
"I know,"
Calla answers, "but it will. Those humans might not possess magic, but their weapons are powerful. Their bombs will rip through immense parts of our world if someone doesn't send them back to where they belong."
"I'm sure it will all be okay in the end,"
Aurora says, though she sounds far from certain. "We stop Rourke, we push the humans out of our world, and everything goes back to normal." "Well, that isn't all of it," I tell her. "We have some other things to worry about. The Guild has Dash, and they've imprisoned my parents somewhere as well. Until we find them and rescue them, nothing will be normal for us."
"Wait, did you say parents? Plural?"
Aurora sits forward.
"Did you find out who your father is?"
I sigh. "Rourke seriously didn't tell you anything, did he?"
"Yeah, I think we've already established that. What's this about your parents?"
I look at Calla. I'm starting to think I should have recorded this whole story about Ada and Zed and Changeling Magic and Violet and Rin being my parents. How many times have I told it now?
"Hey,"
Aurora pokes my leg with her foot.
"Just tell me the story."
I sigh and launch into my explanation once again. By the time I reach the end, Aurora's listening raptly, with wide eyes.
"You're a changeling, and you found your family. That's amazing. And Dash..."
Her face falls. "Darn. Rourke must have sent that letter he kept threatening to send to the Guild. The one tipping them off about Dash working with Griffin Rebels. Why else would they suddenly have become suspicious of him?" "Well, he did disappear to the Unseelie Palace for several days without permission, and with very little explanation," Calla says.
"Hmm. I suppose that would invite some suspicion,"
Aurora admits. "So that's the whole story," I say, leaning back, moving Bandit aside, and uncrossing my legs so I can stretch them out. "I finally find my family, and then they end up in a torture prison, or wherever it is the Guild is hiding them now. I mean, they could still be in the same prison for all we know, just hidden in a different part of it."
"That's a possibility," Calla says.
She sighs and looks around at the floating timer. "We should get some rest. Who knows what magical mess we may have to deal with tomorrow. Or if we'll suddenly find out where the rest of our family is being held captive and have to launch another rescue mission," I say. She smiles.
"We can always hope."
As we spread the sleeping bags out, she adds, "I'll take the first watch. You can do the second half of the night, and we can give Aurora her first night off."
"Keep watch?"
Aurora asks.
"Are you serious?"
"Hey, you wanted to stick with us," I remind her.
"Yes, but..."
"We can argue about this tomorrow night," Calla says. "For tonight, enjoy your sleep." After some grumbling from Aurora, I hand her a set of clean clothes, and she walks to the other side of Imperia to make use of a shower spell. Bandit climbs into my sleeping bag and shuffles all the way to the bottom, and Imperia, already asleep, sends puffs of steam into the air as she snores. My eyes slide shut as my head reaches my pillow, but, as always, thoughts of Vi, Rin, and Dash begin to wander through my mind. Eventually, at some point after my Griffin ability has replenished, and after my imagination plays through a multitude of things that might possibly go wrong in both worlds tomorrow, I slip into dreamland. When Calla shakes my shoulder sometime later, I feel as though I haven't been asleep for nearly long enough. At first I assume it's my turn to keep watch, but she doesn't normally wake me so vigorously.
"What's wrong?"
I mumble, blinking several times and trying to focus on her. She crouches beside me.
"I'm leaving for a little while, Em. I need to go to Central Park. Rourke's magic is spreading quickly, taking over the whole area. I think we were right about him. I think he wants the human world."
Chapter 16. I push myself to my feet as quickly as my sleepy body will allow. What? The Central Park? I realize as I'm speaking that, of course, she's talking about the Central Park. It's right next to the huge hotel Rourke attacked a few days ago. Yes. She attaches a weapons belt around her hips and secures it. Chase was just here, updating me on everything he knows. The entire area has been consumed by an enchanted forest. Humans are trapped inside and can't find their way out. He's gone straight there, and I'm going to join him. I blink a few more times and rub my eyes, wishing I could have had a bit more sleep before confronting a new problem. Has the guild not sent any guardians to rescue those people? That's a thing, she says, turning and heading to the amber tablets. I follow behind her. I can see all these vision reports popping up, way too late, I might add, but hardly any of them are being assigned. So many guardians have been dispatched to deal with the advancing human soldiers, and others are attending the summit with the Seelies and Unseelies, which doesn't leave many to deal with all the incidents taking place across the human realm. So that summit thing is definitely happening? Aurora asks. I look back and see her climbing out of her sleeping bag. Yes, Kala answers. Later today, in a location that obviously hasn't been made public, but Perry and Flint have done well with their eavesdropping and information gathering. Chase and Elizabeth are going along to listen in, so we know what's discussed and what decisions they come to, because I can guarantee they won't make everything public afterwards. And I need to go with to make sure they're properly concealed. As Aurora reaches my side, rubbing her eyes and yawning, I say, wait. So, did you say you're going to Central Park without us? Yes. Kala opens one side of her jacket, revealing an array of small, gleaming weapons, and removes her stylus. But if it's just you and a few other Griffin rebels, and maybe a handful of guardians, then won't you need more help? I can that whole area, the Haverton Tower Hotel, and the park, and some of the smaller surrounding buildings, are under Rourke's control now. I don't want you anywhere near there. He could easily get his hands on you. How could he easily get his hands on me? I argue. He won't know I'm there, especially if you're imagining us as invisible. True, but I don't want to risk your safety. Not when I know he's nearby. I throw my hands up. You can travel anywhere in the world within seconds. Everywhere is nearby. She steps closer to me. You know how important you are to me, to our family. I'm only trying to keep me safe, I know. Then why are you arguing with me? I press my lips together, holding back my frustration. Blurting out I don't like being told what to do would sound incredibly childish, but that's essentially what this is about. Though I wouldn't give up the family I've just discovered for anything, part of me misses being in control of my own life. Chelsea didn't particularly care what I did with my time. I had the freedom to go anywhere I could afford to go, which, sadly, didn't include much beyond Stanmead. But it was still freedom. Now? Well, now I have to do whatever Kala tells me to do. I take a deep breath and try to sound reasonable. I'm not saying I want to run into the midst of danger and be reckless. I don't want Rourke to find me. All I want is to help you save everyone who's stuck inside Rourke's enchanted forest. She shakes her head, turns away, and raises her stylus. She writes on the air itself, and a moment later a doorway appears. She's about to step through it, but she stops. She sighs, looks back at me, and asks, "Why? Why do you want to save them?" Because, I don't know, because I can, and it's the right thing to do. It's hard to tell through the semi-darkness, but I think she might almost be smiling. Fine, she says, but you have to do whatever I tell you. A thrill rushes through me. I reach down beside my sleeping bag and grab my jacket. Of course, I wouldn't think of doing anything else. Are you happy to stay here on your own? Kala asks Aurora. Not that you have a choice. I'm not taking both you and M. Aurora points her thumb over her shoulder. Have you seen my dragon? I'm not exactly alone. Good point, Kala says. And take care of Bandit, please, I add. You are coming back, aren't you? Aurora asks. This isn't a ruse of some sort to get rid of me. We're definitely coming back, Kala assures her. I only have an hour and then I need to leave for the summit. And you're definitely not coming along for that, she adds, looking at me. The only thing we'll be doing is listening. I finish pulling my jacket on. Okay. Right, let's stop wasting time. She loops her arm through mine and steps into the ferry paths. Bye, Aurora says. I look back and see her giving us a small wave. Imperia and I will guard all your stuff. Please don't die. Kala hesitates, which I'm sure has far more to do with leaving all our belongings behind than the possibility that we might die. It's fine, I murmur, as the edges of the doorway begin to move toward each other. We can trust her. And it's just stuff, anyway. We step into a street near Central Park, where it's eerily quiet and a lot darker than I expected. A single light flickers, a siren wails in the distance, and the dark night presses around me. My heart beats a little too quickly as we walk toward the end of the block, then begins racing properly at the sight of the scene awaiting us from the next street onward. It's the stuff of post-apocalyptic nightmares. Crumbling buildings, bent and twisted lampposts, the occasional spark from exposed wiring and trees, vines, and enchanted oversized flowers strangling everything. Holy crap, I whisper. I know you made it sound bad, but this is bad. It's like our world has erupted into this one and is trying to consume it, Kala says. And with those human soldiers advancing further and further into the Fey realm, everything's just becoming so mixed up. It was never supposed to be this way. This is all so wrong, a voice says behind us. We turn and see Chase walking out of the ferry paths toward us. Thanks for coming, he says to Kala. I didn't realize you were bringing Em with. Neither did I, Kala answers. But she was quite insistent. Chase laughs quietly and says, Just as stubborn as your parents, I see. So I've heard, I tell him. Kala's expression turns serious again. How did this forest, this jungle, happen so quickly? Surely Rourke doesn't have the kind of magic to create something so large in so short a time. Apparently he has half the Unseelie army on his side. I remind her. They must have helped. Yes, I suppose so. She looks at Chase. Have you been able to save anyone from this tangled mess?
5 so far. 2 couples and a guy on his own. And I'm not bothering with a glamour. I find people, free them from whatever plant they're twisted up in, lead them out as quickly as possible, then search for more. I have no idea how many are in there, though. And we have limited time if we're hoping to get to the summit.
Well, we can only do as much as we can, Kala says, already moving toward the ruins. Whichever guardians are around, plus Carter, Crystal, and Kobe, we'll have to do the rest. Wait, I say. We may as well use my ability since I'm here. Maybe I can tell the whole forest it doesn't exist anymore, then everyone can get away from the park. Chase hesitates, then says,
I suppose you may as well try. Your ability seems to obey almost everything you say.
I move a few steps closer to the overgrown wreckage, stopping when I reach a fallen lamppost. I exhale deeply, thinking of the size of Central Park, and then mentally adding on more area for the surrounding streets and buildings that have been consumed. Basically, this forest is freaking enormous. As if she can hear my thoughts, Kala asks. Are you sure you'll be okay if you try this? It seems so big. I look over my shoulder at her. My power is pretty big too, isn't it? That's why everyone else wants it. She nods slowly. True. I guess you did close the veil. That was big. I turn back and focus my attention on the forest spreading out before me. If I imagine the entire thing, if that's where my intention is directed, then this should work, right?
Hey!
My gaze snaps up in the direction of the shout. Through the darkness, I see a group of people, 10,
perhaps, though I don't have time to count them, leaping over the ruins with magical ease.
"Get out of there!"
one of them shouts. Sparks of magic fly our way, morphing into flapping, screeching crows. Chase is suddenly beside me, sweeping one hand through the air and tossing the crows aside with a powerful gust of wind. With barely a thought for what I'm doing, I clench my fists and yell, "Don't attack! Don't come a step closer!" And every one of the advancing fairies slams up against an invisible wall. An unexpected thrill races through me as I realize I could tell these people absolutely anything, and they'd have no choice but to obey me. But I barely have time to enjoy the feeling before Calla tugs me sideways into the fairy paths. Chase dives in after me, catching hold of my arm. We stumble out of the fairy paths into an almost identical scene of overgrown destruction, near some other part of the park. The road beneath our feet has buckled from pressure of giant roots spreading beneath it, and water gushes up from beneath the cracks in the tar. Calla whips around, no doubt searching for any sign of a new threat. "Maybe conceal us?" Chase suggests. "Rourke's guys are probably everywhere."
"I am," she answers. "Invisibility."
"That was quick thinking, Em," Chase says to me. "Well done. Now try commanding the forest." He looks back over his shoulder. "Quickly, if you can. I think people are approaching from back there." I nod, pushing aside the disturbing exhilaration of having so easily commanded a group of people. I shut my eyes and picture the entirety of Central Park covered in a magical forest that shouldn't be there. Then I release the control I'm holding over my griffin ability's power and speak. "This enchanted forest, the forest created by Prince Rourke and his followers, no longer exists. Every plant of magical origin is gone, and every human trapped among the plant is now free to move about. Return the park. The park and..." I want to add more. I want to tell the park and surrounding roads and buildings to return to their former state. I want to tell the damage and destruction to vanish, along with the forest. But all my power is already flooding from my body. My head is spinning. Spots of light fill my vision as my body becomes weightless. "Em? Em?" I blink a few times and lift my head. As my surroundings come back into focus, I realize I'm sitting on a sidewalk, propped up between Calla and Chase.
"Are you okay?"
Calla asks. Her hand is against my cheek, turning my face toward hers.
"Yes, just..."
I blink again.
"I didn't have enough..."
"It's working," Chase says.
Calla turns her head, and I struggle to look past her. It happens quickly. I barely have time to see the vines, trees, and other plants being sucked into the ground, like a time-lapse movie clip in reverse, before they're all completely gone. The damage, of course, is still there. Cracked roads, broken pipes, half-destroyed buildings. It looks like a war zone.
"Incredible," Calla murmurs. "I wonder if your command reached the entire forest."
Chase stands.
"It's impossible to tell from here."
"I don't think so,"
I tell them. "I wouldn't have passed out if I had enough power for the whole forest."
"I can see a whole bunch of Rourke's followers now," Chase adds. "Those are definitely unseely uniforms. Doesn't look like they're too happy about suddenly being exposed."
He turns at the sound of hurried footsteps coming from the other direction down the street.
"Now what? More Unseelies?"
Calla takes my arm and pulls me behind a taxi.
"Aren't we concealed?" I ask.
"Yes, just taking extra precautions."
She peers around the edge of the car.
I rub my fingers against my temples, still trying to clear my head, and ask,
"Who is it?"
"Human armed forces," she answers. "Loads of them."
"Not good," Chase mutters. "They have no idea what they're facing."
"Kind of expected, though," I say. "Obviously humans are going to fight back, and they don't mind making a mess if it means getting rid of the enemy. They'll probably blow up the whole park if they have to."
"Let's hope they evacuate their own kind from the park before resorting to such extreme measures," Calla says.
twisting around and raising her stylus against the taxi's front door. I'm opening a doorway. We need to get away from... Bright light pulses outward, and a shudder ripples through the ground. I throw my hands out to steady myself and squeeze my eyes shut against the blinding light. The air is filled with shouts and the sounds of heavy thumps against the road. As the light dims, I lower my hand. Chase is climbing to his feet, and Calla is grabbing onto my arm.
"Are you okay?" she asks Chase. "What was that?"
"Timed magic," he says. "Must have been. They all released magic at the same moment, and those armed forces went flying."
Groans and more shouting reach my ears. "We're leaving," Calla says immediately. She raises her stylus again, and this time nothing interrupts her doorway spell.
"I'm staying a little longer," Chase says. "Just keeping an eye on this situation. Get Em away from here. I'll meet you and Elizabeth at the lake house within the next half hour."
Calla nods as she pulls me into the ferry paths. Darkness surrounds us, and I blink into it, my thoughts still stumbling to catch up with everything that's happened. Chapter 17. Moments later, we're back on the hilltop with Aurora and Imperia, surrounded on all sides by peaceful blue scenery. It's almost surreal compared to the cracked and broken city we just ran from. Aurora climbs quickly to her feet and asks, "What happened there?"
"Em took down the forest," Calla tells her. "Or some of it, at least."
She turns to me and asks, "Are you okay now?"
"Yes. My legs are a little weak, but I'm fine. It's just..." I look over my shoulder, as if I could see through the disappearing doorway and back to the scene we left behind.
"All those people who were just attacked. The soldiers. We just left them there. What if Rourke's army is about to kill them all?
Chase is still there. He won't let that happen."
"But how could he possibly stop them all?"
Calla walks to the tablets and mirror and pulls them from the air.
"With a storm?
But a storm like you've never seen."
She looks back at me.
"Trust me, Em. He can handle it."
I shut my eyes for a moment, then say, "Okay, I'm sure you're right."
"We need to pack up," Calla continues. "I know it's still night here, and you still have time, but I'd prefer to move you both to a new location and restart the countdown before I go to the summit. You'll probably need to move again before I return, though. Possibly more than once."
"Do you think the summit will take that long?" Aurora asks.
"I doubt the summit itself will last more than a day, and if it does, I'll have to leave early in case any guardians are still tracking the spell that's stuck on me. But it's the traveling that will take some time. It's in a region inaccessible through the ferry paths, so it'll take us hours to get there instead of seconds."
"Wow, that must be frustrating for a ferry," I say as I crouch down at the foot of my sleeping bag and start rolling it up.
"Yes. Not a limitation we have to deal with often."
"How will you find us when you return?" Aurora asks.
"Em, do you have an amber? I didn't have mine on me when I fled the palace."
"Oh, yes, I do have one. We bought it the other day. It should be in the backpack."
Bandit hops out the end of my sleeping bag before I finish rolling it. Aurora crouches down and rolls hers up while I move on to Calla's. Then I add the pillows to the pile, shrink everything, and drop it all into the backpack.
"Okay, I think that's all our stuff," Calla says, her eyes scanning the area. "Aurora, do you want to open an extra large doorway so your dragon can fit through?"
We make it through the ferry paths together, each of us holding on to some part of Imperia's body. I head out of the darkness and find that we're on another hill, though this one is a lot rockier, and it's already morning here. Ahead of us, I see more hills and more rocks. Behind us, not too far away, a sheer cliff face reaches ridiculously high into the sky.
"Not as pretty as the last spot, but it'll do just fine," Calla says.
"There's a little town just over that hill." She points to the right. "You can buy food there if you need it. Just be careful," I say.
"We know."
Calla smiles. "I was actually going to say, just make sure to leave Imperia here when you go into town, so no one sees her."
"Oh,
Of course, Aurora says. I guess it would raise suspicion if she showed up in a town not normally frequented by dragons.
Indeed, Kala answers. That's a case for most towns, even in a world of magic.
Aurora takes the backpack from me and asks, Do you mind if I hide between the rocks and use a shower spell? I usually like to bathe when I wake up in the morning, so if there's nothing else urgent to be done...
Oh, sure, go ahead, I tell her.
Enjoy. As she walks away, I turn to Kala.
I know you said I shouldn't go with you to the summit. You're definitely not coming.
Just listen to me, please. You guys don't want to live in hiding forever, do you? And you want the guild to let you help them. Well, my griffin ability can make that possible. I could tell the entire gathering of guardians, sealies and unsealies, not to be afraid of griffin gifted. I can tell them they don't see us as a threat anymore. I can make them believe they should work with griffin gifted instead of locking us up. And they won't have a choice but to obey me. It's the perfect opportunity, with so many leaders gathered together.
Em, Kala says slowly, you can't take away their free will. That isn't right.
But I'd be making them do the right thing. But that isn't...
She sighs. If that's not what they truly believe, then it isn't right to force them into it. Surely you understand that.
I shut my eyes for a moment, breathing out slowly. Yes, I guess I do. It's just... I have a chance to make a real difference. Some good could actually come out of this situation.
I know. But we can't change people who don't want to be changed. At least, not like this.
This isn't the way we get things done. This is who the guild thinks we are. But we have to prove them wrong.
What if they don't even know? What if I make them believe that they came to this decision themselves?
She shakes her head. It would never remain a secret, Em. The truth about how you forced non-griffin-gifted Fae into doing something against their will would eventually get out. In the end, it would probably have more of a negative impact than a positive one. I stuff my hands into my pockets and look away. Yeah, I guess you're right. After several moments of silence, Kala says, Okay, so... She looks around. You should be fine, right? You've got the backpack. You can keep the mirror and the tablets. Don't act on any of the visions you might see, even if they look important, and no one from the guild has been assigned to prevent them.
Yeah, yeah, I answer. Don't do anything dangerous. Got it.
If you need to keep busy, Kala adds, you're welcome to continue practicing all the things we've been working on together. Especially, oh, that's what I was forgetting. She walks to the backpack and digs through the contents. You should take a look at this. She hands me a thick scroll of papers. Chase left it with me when he came to tell me about Central Park. It's everything Perry's dug up on a place called Reinhold Research Station. Turns out it's real. Lots of reading, which I don't have time for at the moment. You can give me a summary when I get back.
Oh, cool.
I take the scroll from her. I thought Perry said he'd never heard of this place, and that he has, like, zero time at the moment to privately investigate anything extra. Kala smiles. That's one of the great things about Perry. He always comes through for us, no matter how busy he is. After hugging me tightly, she opens a doorway and waves as she steps into the fairy paths. I try to convince myself, as the darkness closes around her, that everything's going to be fine while she's gone. After Kala leaves, I set aside the Reinhold scroll to look at later and start practicing some of the things I've learned in recent days. What I really want to do is practice using my griffin ability for fighting, but it won't be replenished for another few hours. Instead, Aurora and I come up with various commands I could use during a battle, if I ever find myself in the midst of one. All guardians, drop your weapons. Fall down and slide to the edge of the room. Arrow, strike the unseelie guard's shoulder. Sword, chop off everyone's hands. That last one was Aurora's suggestion. Apparently, mine were getting too boring. When we're tired of commands, we try throwing our magic around.
Plain old sparks are the easiest and quickest, of course. So we stretch ourselves by trying to shape our magic into different forms. Sand, hail, wind, bats, razor blades. It takes me far too long before I can hurl anything interesting at Aurora, but it's fun to try. Then, after doing a quick spell to draw water from the ground so we're no longer panting with thirst, we set up makeshift targets and move back to real weapons. Aurora goes straight for the bow, since archery is her favorite. I practice throwing knives and various star-shaped pieces of metal, which I mostly still suck at without the use of magic. When I pick up two training swords and try to hand one to Aurora, she refuses. Apparently a princess has to draw the line somewhere. So, I practice some of the footwork and different strikes Kala showed me, ignoring Aurora when she tells me how stupid I look doing a slow-motion dance around a non-existent opponent while swinging a wooden stick. Eventually, I'm too tired for further practice, so we sit against Imperia's side, and despite Aurora's complaints about the lack of flavor, we each eat a dinner pop. My griffin ability replenishes as I finish chewing, filling my body with an invigorating rush of power. I focus on holding on to it, but it doesn't take too much effort anymore. I tilt my head back against Imperia's slippery scales, and for a little while, I let myself enjoy a conversation that includes entirely random topics unrelated to the world ending or half the people I care about being imprisoned. Like the fact that Aurora likes to sing in the bathroom. Hell no, I don't sing at all if I can help it. And the story of how she came to be adopted by the Unseelie royal family. So that witch just left you there? And they never found her? And the strange admission that she's always envied human teenagers. Now that can't possibly be true. I say when we reach the teenager topic, surely nobody has ever envied human teens. It's such an awkward phase of life. I still feel super awkward half the time, and I'm nearing the end of my teenage years. Fairy teens are awkward too, Aurora assures me. But at least human teens don't have to deal with all that embarrassing magic. If a girl likes a boy, the whole world doesn't have to know about it. I raise an eyebrow. I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, like when you're attracted to someone and magic escapes you and does weird random things and everybody knows why. Nope. But as I say this, I think back to the night Dash and I sat on the floor inside the Shadow World castle, waiting for the changeling spell on Danny and Ada to begin working. Sparks and flames appeared from nowhere, and Dash told me it was his magic. Then he said he thought he'd outgrown something, something he didn't particularly want to explain to me. Oh, I say. Oh, never mind. I think I do know what you're talking about. You see, you've been embarrassing yourself and you didn't even know it. Actually, it was Dash's magic that escaped. Not mine. A slow smile lights up Aurora's face. I told you, she crows. I told you he loves you. Whoa, hey, nobody said anything about love. I look around, searching for a change in topic, and see Imperia's back leg beside me. Hey, how safe do you think it would be for us to take Imperia for a ride? I run my hand across her smooth, shimmering scales. I seriously miss dragon riding. I'm guessing dragon riding is on Kala's definitely don't do that list. I let out a groan. I think you're right. We probably don't want to draw attention to ourselves. I stretch my legs out in front of me as Bandit wanders closer in cat form. He sits neatly in front of me, then shifts into a small version of Imperia. Aurora laughs and claps her hands. So clever, Bandit. Does he know what we're saying? I ask her. I've often wondered how much he understands, but I've never actually asked anyone. I've heard that Formatra are quite intelligent, she says. I'm sure he doesn't understand everything, but I guess he understands enough to know we're talking about dragons. I lean forward and pat Bandit's scaled snout. Kala says it won't be easy for him to transform into a dragon for much longer. Something about him getting bigger and it requiring a lot of magic. Aurora nods, I think I've heard something like that. I tilt my head as an idea begins to form. My griffin ability is super powerful, right? Aurora looks at me as if that might be a trick question. Yes. When I say things, they usually happen. Again, that would be a yes. So... I lean forward and focus on my shape-shifting pet. My magical voice echoes around us as I say, Bandit, you have enough power to transform into a dragon the size of Imperia whenever you want to, no matter how old you are. I sit back as all my griffin power drains from my body in one go. I'm left feeling dizzy, but not as lightheaded as I did at Central Park. I blink a few times and watch Bandit. Beside me, Aurora leans forward. A shiver courses through Bandit's body. His eyes widen a little, looking for all the world, as if he's startled. Then, he begins to grow. I stare in open-mouthed amazement as his body becomes larger and larger, filling the space in front of us. Oh, crap, I mutter, realizing the problem we're about to have, at the same time Aurora figures it out. We both jump to our feet, and Aurora smacks Imperia's side. Move, 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 she shouts. Imperia rises as quickly as she can for a creature of her size, lurching a few giant steps away and saving us from being squished between her and Bandit. Finally, when he's about the same size as Imperia, he stops growing. He looks down at me with gigantic, fiery orange eyes, and all I can say is, wow. Then, as we watch, he lumbers a few steps backward and begins to change again, not into a smaller form, but into a different dragon just as enormous. Black scales line his body, and the forked tongue that darts out of his mouth is bright red. That is awesome, Aurora says. I walk closer, run my hand along Bandit's leg, and gaze up at him. You are seriously the coolest pet ever. It isn't yet evening in this part of the world, but since we didn't sleep much last night, and we need to move to our next location in just over 8 hours, I suggest we pretend it's nighttime and go to bed. And we need to take turns keeping watch, remember? As I expected, Aurora's not impressed with this idea. Is that really necessary when we have Imperia and Bandit? They'll wake us if something goes wrong. And what if Imperia and Bandit fall asleep too? Don't tell me haven't heard Imperia snoring. She was really loud last night. Aurora rolls her eyes. Fine, we can do the keeping watch thing, but can I sleep first? I'm super exhausted after using so much magic earlier. Sure thing, princess, whatever you want. Hey, was that a training sword you just threw at me? More like a pencil, she says with a snort. It doesn't deserve to be called a sword when it's shorter than my finger. I return the miniature sword to the backpack and say, in case you were wondering, your 4 hours have already started. Ugh, that is so not enough sleep for me. And don't give me another princess comment. She adds as I open my mouth. 4 hours isn't enough for anyone. Actually, Calla told me fairies can last longer without sleep than humans can. I tell her. That's why I haven't been as tired as I thought I'd be. Yeah, well, whatever. Aurora climbs into her sleeping bag. I'd prefer a lot more. As she shuffles further down into her sleeping bag, I retrieve the scroll containing all the information Perry found regarding Reinhold Research Station. I settle against Imperia's front leg and start scanning through the pages. It starts with some boring details about all the people involved in designing and building the station, which I quickly move on from once I realize none of the names mean anything to me. But the details on the next page get straight to the point of Reinhold, to experiment on griffin-gifted Fey. My stomach turns as I read about the various griffin abilities the researchers at Reinhold have tried to extract and make use of. Most of these experiments have failed, but this report mentions two that have been successful. One is a healing ability that's so quick it's almost instant. The healing magic has been mixed with other factors to form a liquid that's currently, at least current at the time this report was written, in the final phase of testing. The other successful experiment mentioned is the first referred to as a mental prison. This griffin ability, belonging to a woman named Shyla,